G'day, it's nice to have you join us on this RN podcast. After you've enjoyed this one, you might like to visit us on Books and Arts, your daily coverage of, well, books and arts. You can download us from the RN website.
On RN, you're listening to The Rhythm Divine, where spirituality meets music, with Jeff Wood.
One of the first times I went south, Jasper, Alabama, outside of Birmingham, Alabama, it's a tiny little church, the memorial singing of some people that I'd met, and I was trying to keep a low profile, and I was in the second row, and somebody from the first row then said, I'm sitting back there with that Yankee. But first break, this woman, elderly woman, came up to me all enthused, and she said, wow, you have a beautiful voice. I'm 92 years old, and you have a beautiful voice. And I'm not used to people saying my voice is beautiful. And so I, you know, politely thanked her. But then she went on and said, I can hear you all the way across the church. You have a beautiful voice.
And the voice belongs to Stephen Levine, a sacred harp singer from Minneapolis in Minnesota, who we'll meet again later in the program. G'day, I'm Jeff Wood. When the great American song collector Alan Lomax travelled to the Deep South in 1959, he found a world of sacred song that had been hidden for generations. Inside a country church in the low red hills of northeastern Alabama, Lomax heard the raw sound of sacred harp singing, unaccompanied Protestant folk hymns more than 200 years old. As he set up his recording gear, the congregation started an Easter anthem. They continued singing for the next few hours until a lunch break before resuming again in the afternoon with a mixture of folk tunes, revivalist hymns, odes and anthems. Apart from the sheer number of hymns sung that day, Lomax was struck by the unique seating arrangement. Men and women in rows around four sides of a hollow square. Inside the square, a song leader would take his place, calling out the song page and then leading the hymn, beating time with his arms. The music takes its name from The Sacred Harp, a songbook of more than 500 hymns published in 1844 by Benjamin Franklin White and Elisha King, and updated continuously ever since. It's a form of shape note singing, a simplified musical notation using four shapes to mark the pitch, a diamond, triangle, oval and square. Its roots can be traced back to an 18th century singing school movement in New England that eventually spread south and west where it remains strong today. Although a deeply spiritual experience based on the Protestant tradition, the singing isn't affiliated with any particular church or denomination. Alan Lomax thought he was recording a dying art, but since 1959, sacred harp singing has thrived and spread around the world, including Australia, where the first national convention and all-day singing was held late last year in Sydney. I was there, and on The Rhythm Divine this week, we'll hear some of the voices and the songs, along with some of the more recent recordings of sacred harp singing, including the soundtrack to the 2003 film Cold Mountain. We'll also meet one of the visiting singers, Stephen Levine, from Minneapolis, who has made several trips to churches in the Deep South. But we'll start with two Australian pioneers, Natalie Sims and Sean Whelan, founders of the Melbourne Sacred Harp Singers.
Sacred harp singing is a form of community choral singing. We're singing in four parts. So we sit around an open square shape all facing in towards each other, and we're singing from a book called The Sacred Harp. That's where the name comes from. And it refers not to a musical instrument, but to the human voice. That is the sacred harp. So we're singing songs that are old hymns set to a particular style of music and a certain style of arrangement that developed in the United States in the 1770s. But we're getting together and singing as a community just for the participation and the fun of it. That's what sacred harp singing is to me. Well, hi, I'm Sean Whelan, and I've been singing Sacred Harp music since the time when Natalie and I lived in the United States in around about 1999-2000. I fell in love with the very raw, rich sound of it, and came back to Australia and found I just couldn't live without it.
My name's Natalie Sims, and I've always sung since I was a kid with my family and through church. And when we came across Sacred Harp singing, it was unlike any other singing that I'd done, in that it seemed to give me more energy than it took.
So Natalie and I are the founders of the Melbourne Sacred Harp Singers. We've been singing in Melbourne for about 11 years now. We started the group just to sing monthly with friends, which is what Sacred Harp singing is all about, getting together with people, enjoying each other's company and the sound of the music. We never perform, it's not a performance choir. But we started the group so that we could have the same kind of community singing experience in Australia that we'd had in the States.
And we started the group because there wasn't anyone else in Australia doing it at the time. So we sort of had to start the group ourselves, even though we really didn't know what we were doing. But, you know, 11 years later, 12 years later, we're doing okay. We've learned how to do it now.
And here we are at the first ever all-day singing in Australia. So part of the tradition of Sacred Harp singing is that the small groups in various towns across the United States would get together on a state basis or a regional basis or a national basis for a full day of singing or even a full weekend of singing. So we'll be singing all day today, and then a few of us will kick on tomorrow for some more singing.
The book The Sacred Harp is a compilation of shape note songs, and it gets updated fairly regularly. So there's songs in it that have been written more recently, and there are other shape note books that are also published, and that people who sing Sacred Harp will often sing those songs as well, because it's the same style, they just happen not to be in the Sacred Harp book. So certainly the group in Sydney call themselves shape note singers rather than Sacred Harp, so that you get an understanding of the broadness of the tradition. It's not just about one book, it's about lots of songs. Shape notes are a way of writing musical notation. So it looks the same as normal music, except instead of all the notes being round, they're four different shapes, which are circles, triangles, squares, and little diamonds. And those shapes tell you where you are in the scale. It's kind of, if you think about the sound of music, where you'd be singing do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. With shape note, it's very similar, but there's not seven different shapes because that's hard to print. There's four different shapes, so it's fa, sol, la, fa, sol, la, mi, fa. And that's the names of the shapes and the way you can find your way around the stave, even if you haven't read music before. Initially, it was designed as a way of teaching music to people who had forgotten how to read music. So the history of shape note music is that travelling preachers and travelling songwriters would go from small village to small village, usually within a fairly close area, and teach them how to sing. Some of them would also preach, but some of them would just teach people how to sing, and then they would sell their books of music notation. And there's similar traditions in the UK as well, but the shape note tradition is one that arose particularly in the US, so it's an American tradition.
The harmonies of Sacred Harp music are quite distinctive, and that's what attracts most of us to be singing it. I'm not a top-rate musicologist, but some of the things that characterise these harmonies, for those who know about these things, are that there's a lot of open fifths, there are a lot of fourths, and there are a lot of open sort of 1-5-8 chords. So big, open, gutsy sounds. There are also a number of seconds, particularly as melodies cross each other or come close to each other. There are various ways in which Sacred Harp music breaks the so-called rules of harmony that were developed in the classical period. And in fact, Sacred Harp music was pushed out of the main centres of population in the northeastern United States by the arrival of sort of so-called proper church music, proper classical music, which is what most of us today would think of as proper church music. But actually this earlier, and not indigenous I guess, but early American form of singing was preserved in very small, isolated rural communities who loved the raw, gutsy sound of it. And a century or so later, the rest of us have rediscovered that. And those raw, gutsy harmonies is what most people come for.
Hello, I'm Stephen Levine. I'm from Minneapolis, Minnesota in the United States, and I have flown out to Australia to sing at the first Australian All-Day Shape Note Convention. This is a trip of a lifetime. I love being here in Australia. I love the excuse to come out and sing this music that I've been singing for 30 years or so, meet new people who sing it, sing with some people I've met before, and just help make the around-the-world connections that this music has made for me. I love any sort of singing that's not about performing on a stage for an audience. That's about the joy of singing with other people. I do pub songs, shanty songs. I grew up in a folk music family, attending folk music festivals. I first heard this music when I was 10 years old, which was 1966, at a folk festival as a workshop. And even then, I sort of liked it. I liked it because the music made sense to me, and it was just looking at other people and singing this music with them. And then a good 15 years later, when I was living in Boston, friends of mine were singing this with a regular group who sort of tapped me on the shoulder and said, you know, this is something we think you'd like. And at that point in my life, I had no other regular place to be singing with other people. That isn't a choir with a rehearsal schedule and a practice schedule. That's a different thing to me. And so I came to sing and sort of got caught up in that particular group and that particular music and enjoyed it very much. But when I left Boston several years later to move to Minnesota, I thought that it wasn't the Shape Note music, but this particular group of just people that had become my sort of support group. They made me a quilt when I left the city. But I showed up in Minnesota, and there were a few people singing this, and they were happy to have a strong tenor who knew the songs. And then gradually the group in Minnesota became bigger and bigger and a more regular thing and sort of exactly filled the exact place in my life that the singing of this music had filled in my life in Boston. And I thought, okay, it's not the individual people. There's something about people self-selectingly who want to just get together and sing this music. And from there, I started traveling to the Deep South in the United States, where the music has basically been maintained in isolated little areas for the last 200 years. I thought I was going to make one trip south, almost a pilgrimage, just an academic sort of thing. And I went south and sang this music with people who had been singing it their whole lives, whose grandparents had been singing it, for whom the music had a meaning, a spiritual, religious meaning for them. I was just very much taken with being invited in, almost as a guest, to people singing this so from the heart, so free, so passionately. It freed me to sing the music and not hold back the emotions that the music makes me feel, which in general for me is grand happiness, not grand tears. And so once you sort of have the experience of singing this music in that fashion with people who are emotionally free, you're addicted. You want to just keep singing it. And then I started traveling south more. And when they started singing this in England, I went to England. And now I'm in Australia. The music exists as music, but in some ways the music is the method through which I can be with other people. I have a voice that is not always enjoyed. But in the Deep South, traditionally, idiosyncratic vocal texture was not something to be sanded away. There wasn't a notion of bel canto. There wasn't a notion of this is the way a voice should sound. So I have this voice with an odd timbre, but a bit of power. And it's a notion of taking what you have and using it to do what you can with it. Or in my case, it's if I'm at a Shape Note sing and I'm familiar with the music, how can I use the voice to bring everybody in, people who don't necessarily know the part?
Music from the soundtrack to the 2003 Civil War movie Cold Mountain, which brought sacred harp singing to a worldwide audience. Alabama's Liberty Baptist Church Sacred Harp Singers with Idumea. Before that, we heard tenor Stephen Levine, a sacred harp singer from Minneapolis, who was here last October for Australia's first ever sacred harp convention, an all-day singing. On RN, this is The Rhythm Divine at abc.net.au/radionational. And an Easter special taking us into the world of sacred harp singing. The American ensemble Apollo's Fire from their album Come to the River, and Wondrous Love from the Sacred Harp Songbook, page 159. And a little later on, we'll hear the young English folk singer Sam Carter's contemporary take on sacred harp. Sacred harp, named after the 1844 hymnal, which in an updated version is still used today, is a form of religious shape note singing which uses four syllables, fa, sol, la and mi, each represented by a different shape, square, triangle, diamond and oval. At the start of each song, which is known as a lesson, the singers run through the tune pronouncing only the syllables. This gives the four parts, the tenors, the altos, trebles and basses, a chance to practice the melody. The second time round, they sing the lyrics. And what lyrics they are! A much deeper and darker emotional landscape than contemporary Christian worship music. Sometimes joyous, sometimes bleak, but always aware of life's brief span.
The first time I went south, I actually went to two different singings. One at a small little country church in Alabama in, well, only about an hour west of Atlanta. So it wasn't even all that far from a big city, but it might as well have been a billion miles away from a big city. In a church, a tiny little church that was no longer even in operation as a church. They just kept the church as a building so they could have this singing once a year that had been going on there for 100 years. In this tight little room with the most live acoustics imaginable, with the Southern singers for whom it had, as I say, it had religious meaning, but that was really just about big voices and loud singing and ways of singing I hadn't heard before. And that was very exciting musically. But the next day, I went to the Antioch Primitive Baptist Church in Ider, Alabama, which is the home church of a family that lives in that area, the Wooten family, who has kept the music alive within their family and through their church for them. And this is their big singing. By the time I went to that singing, I already knew the music. This is one of the gentlemen there said to me, "You can sing closed book. You just enjoy this," which was true. But I was surrounded by this family who was taking me in and saying, "You sing with us. You feel something in this music that we feel. You're in our club." But they would get up with their family and they would sing the music and they would cry. These great big burly farmers, although I don't mean to be, they're certainly very, very educated, but I mean, people from a different world who I wouldn't expect to be so emotionally free, were emotionally free through the music. And people wanted to talk about the music and the memories the music evoked for them and the family memories it evoked for them. And there were certain songs that aren't in the shape note, in the sacred harp that they were singing from, but that their family sings. And they would pass out Xeroxes and we'd sing these schmaltzy 19th century parlor kind of songs, "Love It Home," and but it didn't feel schmaltzy and maudlin. It felt sincere. In the Northeast, where I started singing this, and even in the North, I think we're all a little bit self-conscious about expressing emotion, about admitting our passion for what I just called schmaltzy. And in the case of the Sacred Harp, through religious images and metaphors, which are very intense emotionally, whatever your belief or not, the images, the words are intense. And so to be with people who, I think because it was within the safety of their family, their culture, and their tradition, they could be free, a little less cynical, I think, than my home culture. And I did find that refreshing, and in time I found it to be a way of making friends with people I would otherwise never know.
One of the classic Sacred Harp recordings made by the song collector Alan Lomax in 1959. Antioch, sung by the Alabama State Sacred Harp Convention from a box set of Lomax recordings, Songs of the South. Before that, one of the strongest voices in Sacred Harp singing today, Stephen Levine from Minnesota, recorded at Australia's first ever Sacred Harp Convention, known as an all-day singing, held in Sydney late in 2012. We also heard from Natalie Sims and Sean Whelan, founders of the Melbourne Sacred Harp Singers. For more details and some photos from the all-day singing, head to abc.net.au/radionational and look for The Rhythm Divine, where you can hear this program again with our online audio. I'm Jeff Wood. Thanks for listening. My thanks also to Emma Craddock for her help during the convention, and to Phil McKellar for sound production this week. I'll leave you with a new take on an old tradition, the young English folk singer Sam Carter, winner of the BBC Folk Award for Best Newcomer in 2010, who is also an active Sacred Harp singer. Sam's new album, The No Testament, is his attempt to mix devotional music styles like Sacred Harp with modern secular concerns. We'll hear the opening tracks, starting with the song that we just heard, Antioch, by the Neasden Sacred Harp Singers, and Sam Carter's own Dreams Are Made of Money. And that's The Rhythm Divine.
Maker Relief Foundation began by supporting ageing blues and roots artists who'd fallen on hard times.
The communities that a lot of these musicians come from, no one has any extra cash. There is no extra cash. You know, it's this ongoing daily grind of abject poverty.
Along the way, they rediscovered a musical heritage from the American South. And you can stream this Into the Music from the RN website.